Blog Talk Radio.
The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVAD Mtor, ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knott.
Ladies and gentlemen, madam and messieurs, boys and girls, mes enfants, welcome to another edition of Night Zone Radio.
Suppose you were given a set of keys. Keys that awaken a worldwide sleeping network of energy. Keys that open a library of ancient information. Knowledge that science is only now rediscovering. Keys that encode new systems of technology with powers to heal, to alter consciousness, and affect social change. Keys that provide a bridge between physical and non-physical realms. Keys that ultimately unlock universal potential within you. And suppose great efforts have been employed to suppress their origins. For over 15 centuries, the mysterious crop circles have been mentioned in academic and religious tests. In the 1890s, farmers and military personnel witnessed them being created in seconds by tubes of light and other luminosities. But around 1980, the phenomenon went into overdrive and exploded worldwide, with some 10,000 reports spread over 29 countries. A major controversy erupted, followed by a pre-designed debunking campaign through the media. But the 80 eyewitness accounts clearly tell another story, that a genuine phenomenon is at work. So what are crop circles? Why are they here? And what is responsible? Tonight, we shall delve into the mystery of crop circles and their meaning with Freddy Silva.
Welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
And indeed, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Night Zone. I have with me tonight Freddy Silva, probably the foremost, the absolute expert you could ever get, probably on crop circles. Good evening, Freddy. Welcome to the Night Zone.
Hello, Colin.
It's great for you to be here, Freddy. I know you and I have been dancing around for about 2 years now, trying to get our schedules jiving so we could do this tonight.
That's when you're popular.
Yeah, really. What can I say? You've been busy, man. That's all I can say. But first of all, let's throw out this notion that these two farm lads with a 12-pack of beer and a plank of wood and some twine created all of these crop circles around the world. It just simply isn't true, and crop circles have been around forever, right?
Absolutely, and the story that they basically responsible for 5,000 crop circles in their own time seems ludicrous in the first place. I mean, this means that their wives never even noticed that they were gone every single evening. Mm-hmm. And what's more interesting is that the back in the days when this was revealed, we were warned by people working within the British government that within a few weeks the British Ministry of Defence would be making, and I quote, two local artists responsible as the makers of all the crop circles in order to keep the interest in the crop circles down. So it was an inside job to begin with, and the fact that during the press conferences when we cross-referenced them, they couldn't even remember which crop circles they did. All of their stories fell apart. They ran a bunch of hypocrisies and blatant lies, which they basically just read off published media. And by the time we finished with them, they didn't even know when they'd actually started.
Right.
And the fact that so much of the information had not been published when they came out as well meant that for 100 years before Doug and Dave arrived, crop circles were already part of a local phenomenon happening in Britain and also to a certain degree in Canada. So I think we can dismiss them outright as a big lie.
Yeah. Well, why do you think the Department of Defense and the CIA colluded to take us up the trail, so to speak?
I think it's like any unknown technology, any unknown phenomenon that exists, like UFOs, for example. I think that the government wants to know as much as we do, or I should say a section of government wants to know as much as we do, because government's too huge. It hasn't got time to deal with phenomena like this. Mm-hmm. But certainly if there's some sort of military advancement that can be learned from the gleaning of technology, because they a lot of the people at the CIA and the British government thought that this was all to do with UFOs, and to a certain degree it is, but not to the huge degree that they think it is. So they still keep it under surveillance even to this day.
Right.
So when you have that much information and technology possibly at your disposal, you want to learn as much as possible while keeping the rest of us chasing each other's tails, and that was certainly the case with the UFO phenomenon going all the way back into the 1940s and continues today. They debunk it on one end. They pay people to go out and be skeptical and write skeptical articles for the media about it. But in the meantime, they will go and investigating it, and according to certain sources, they'll even back engineer the technology that they've captured so far. And it's the same thing with crop circles. They're trying to learn what this is all about. They want to know what's behind it, who's behind it, and what the technology behind it is.
So would you say that the debunking was at the same level as it was during the Roswell fiasco?
Oh, it was identical. In fact, when one of the people that worked in the government that was friendly to the research community was telling us about the Northern Ireland conflict, for example, they said it works exactly the same way as any kind of debunking situation where someone within the government, usually linked to the military, sets up a fictitious press agency, and they'll feed the media with these nonsensical reports for example, I mean, the Roswell is a brilliant example where they talk about the fact that the bodies that were supposedly retrieved from this crash was the crash test dummies that were trying to work on a new parachute, and they said that this happened in 1949, to which I laugh, and I said, well, that was an incredible parachute that you guys were testing, because this happened in 1947. That means that the crash test dummies took 2 years to jump out of a plane and land. I mean, that's one hell of a parachute.
that's one hell of a trip.
Exactly, and the problem with trying to explain away the mysterious is that it requires really improbable explanations like that, and they end up tripping over themselves, So, the whole thing really is a setup to just to try and protect themselves while they buy their time to try and learn something the same way that we do.
Yeah. So why do you think that all of a sudden in the 80s? I mean, we broke open, like a festering wound on crop circles. Now, it wasn't because of Doug and Dave. There had to be some other catalyst that caused that.
It's a strange story. I mean, to understand crop circles, you have to look at the history of them. And these things go back at least 4 centuries. I mean, they're called the devil's circles, the witches' rings. In the 1890s, you have policemen and farm people watching these things. They've been created by beams of light and strange rotating objects, brightly colored balls, in about 15 seconds or less. And you have to sort of understand that this is sort of a cyclical phenomenon, and it seems to appear at times when there's a big cry from the collective subconscious of humanity for outside help. And of course, that would be ridiculously easy for someone to come down here and to help fix our problems. I mean, it defeats the whole purpose of, incarnating in the physical world, so to speak.
Right.
We create our own theater. We have to be the players, and we have to figure out the ending for ourselves. And I think that's what's happened sometime around in the early 80s. There was some kind of momentum that was brought up by the collective subconscious of humanity to try and move things forward. And as things tend to happen, the universe answered. And it said, right, you want to get things moving forward. We're going to give you these strange symbols, and you're going to have to sort them out. You're going to have to investigate them. We're going to use beauty as a bait to get your attention. And you're going to wonder why the plants aren't damaged. You're going to wonder why they're swirled. You're going to wonder why there's no physical impression made on the ground. I mean, these plants are literally just hovering above the air.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to ask a lot of questions. And when you ask a lot of questions and you look at symbols, which are mysterious, and a mystery, of course, begs you to ask questions, you're slowly going to figure out that there are numerical values encoded in these things. There are strange geometries. And that will lead you to technology, and then you'll put the pieces together, and you'll go and play and build these things for yourself, and that's how the process of self-empowerment becomes. In a way, it's very linked to the processes behind Star Trek, which sounds crazy, but bear with me for a second. Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, attended a lot of seances by a very well-known medium called Phyllis Schlemmer.
Mm-hmm.
And in her book, she actually outlines a lot of the trance channelings. And you look at the people in the room with her, one of them happens to be Gene Roddenberry asking some very pertinent questions about the origins of life and the universe. And the answers that the trans came back to him with are exactly the blueprint for all the kinds of things that come up in Star Trek, and specifically the Prime Directive. And the Prime Directive is all about the law of non-intervention, and that is that if an advanced culture ever interacts with another culture, the consequences can be deadly. And we've seen that here on Earth when, you know, a group of us go into the jungles of New Guinea. We find a whole bunch of civilized people down there, you know, not wearing any clothes and throwing those narrows around. And, of course, the consequences of the interchange are disastrous for those for that culture. So that's the way it's always been done. And it's the same way with crop circles. It's done mysteriously, quietly, through symbol. But within symbol is the mystery to the whole phenomenon.
Right. And now, you mentioned symbols and geometry. I'm quite sure we've thrown these pictorials through a supercomputer at one time or another. And you state that that this is something for us to be enlightened, to move forward with. Has there been anything from any supercomputer checks that, you know, can kind of hit you on the head and say, look, this is real?
I think the supercomputer is my head.
Okay.
It's our collective brain. What we've found over the years, just by sort of slowly beavering away in our own little rooms and slowly exchanging information with one another, it's a very cross-denominational phenomenon as well. It requires the knowledge of many, many different types of backgrounds to put the pieces together. So far, we've extracted 5 brand new mathematical theorems from crop circles, and this is the first time probably since Euclid in 300 BC that this has happened. In fact, the circle makers actually filled in a certain hole in Euclid's 13 treatises on mathematics where these theorems by logic should have been. Then we have something which is very dramatic, and that is that on the original cover of my book, there was a beautiful sort of tetrahedron crop circle which really got the attention of several physicists around the world, and they quietly looked at the mechanics and the numerical values of this drawing. And so far in England, in Oklahoma, and also in Australia, there have been 3 different sets of individuals who built this two-dimensional shape as a three-dimensional object in their laboratories, and they got it to levitate. And one of the things that was said through the trance channelings back in the 80s, when the phenomenon really was very rare, was that somewhere, at some time, people would be used to decode technological information in the crop circles and build devices which would defy the illusion of gravity and also time. And, of course, 25 years later, it's now coming true. Now, I'm just letting people know about this because the information will eventually come out in its own good time. Because, as we know, the right time to bring out this kind of information depends to a certain degree on the political climate at the time. So these people are just waiting for the right moment to reveal this to the world. But I can assure you that they have actually deciphered some of the technical knowledge in the crop circles, and they bring it out as machinery.
Now, do you think this is linked in any shape or form with the galactic alignment and this new world we're supposed to understand after 2012? Do you think there's any linkage there at all?
I think there's a linkage to the timing of the mechanics of the universe. I don't think that nothing's going to happen in 2012.
Right.
In fact, I was actually very tempted to write a book called 2013, The Hangover. I think it would become a bestseller. The Olmec, who came up with the original calendar, and then the Maya obviously pursued it, for them, the cycles and changes of the ages were literally a time for celebration. They said they would consider these moments very fortuitous, and the fact that they actually survived them in the first place. There were moments where we would actually learn to improve ourselves as human beings. But there is no doubt that there is a machinery at work here where the Earth and the solar system is aligned in a certain way to the galactic center. And, things do happen on a certain mechanical level, and I think there is a relationship because every time you have a change of cycles, historically, when you go back to the time of the flood in 9000 BC, what you find is that at the closure of ages and at the start of new cycles, there are always all kinds of strange portents coming around. And there's also an incredible link to temple building. Tiwanaku and Teotihuacan, Stonehenge, the pyramids, they always appear and come out of the woodwork right about the time of the close of cycles. Now, the strange thing about crop circles is they are exactly the same as Gothic cathedrals, the same as pyramids, the same as Stonehenge. They are built on exactly the same magnetic, sacred geometric and numerical values as these monuments, except that we've forgotten to build these monuments. We haven't been building sacred sites for a good 1,500 years now. So someone's doing it for us. So in that respect, yes, there is a relationship. It is a time when these crop circles are appearing, just like their sacred temple predecessors, they're appearing exactly, and I mean exactly, on the crossroads of the Earth's magnetic lines of energy. And that means printing information onto the Earth's magnetic grid, and they're also influencing the magnetic grid. So it's a very deliberate timing to coincide with this change of cycles.
Now, do you think, well, you talk about these crop circles being imprinted on the Earth and on the magnetic lines and what have you. This is obviously, is this a conscious race that is doing this to us, or is this our own cry of consciousness?
Well, I think it's very deliberate, just like temples are built very deliberately on the surface of the Earth. I mean, whenever you go around the Earth, I mean, without exception, every sacred site on the planet is built on the same intersecting lines of the Earth's magnetic grid. People call them the telluric currents, say it properly. The crop circles, the genuine circles, which is one of the ways we define the real from the fake, they also are built on the same nodes of energy. So if you look at the eyewitness accounts of, and there's at least 80 of them around the world, they talk about the crop circles appearing two ways. One is usually accompanied by some kind of translucent beam or some kind of tube. They call it like a cookie cutter that comes out of the clouds. And it rotates the crop in front of them, and in less than 15 seconds, the pattern appears. But then there are those other eyewitnesses that talk about the fact that the beam comes down, rotates the crop, retracts, and nothing happens for another day or two. Now, that tells me two things. If the crop circle appears right there in front of them, that means that something has been programmed onto the grid by an outside force, and that force comes from way outside the planet's atmosphere. The second thing is that there's some kind of beam with information that goes into the Earth, and the Earth then spits the pattern back out again. And I've come across many cultures, many ancient cultures, that talk about symbols which are imprinted within the Earth. And I always wondered what that was until I read the eyewitness accounts of crop circles sort of appearing, but not appearing, but then appearing the next day. It tells me that the Earth is alive. So it does make me wonder, are there two things going on here? Is there, one, the imprinting of information by a conscious source? And we know it's conscious because it defines very well where these circles are going to appear. We can interact and have interacted with them and even have even posited information to this circle-making force and got back replies. So we know it's conscious. It knows we're here. It even plays games with us. It has a very unique sense of humor. And at the second time, I think part of our subconscious is also creating it, because there have been a number of experiments where we have actually elicited a direct response based on designs that we've actually sat and meditated upon, and those designs appear. So whether we are precognitive the designs or whether we are influencing the Earth's energy field, of course, remains to be proved, but there is definitely a two-way interaction going on.
Interesting. I've always believed that Mother Earth is a live species, if you will, for lack of a better word. That Mother Earth is breathing, and we're like fleas on a dog. We're just holding on for good measure, I think.
It needs to shift as well. I mean, the Earth has to do what it needs to do. And in fact, you just reminded me of a piece of there's a trans-channel piece of the material from the 80s that this is before the crop circles ever became aware to most people. A woman in England who often works with the police, and of course they never acknowledge that publicly.
No.
And she helps. She has a near 100% record of helping them with their murder inquiries and whatnot. And one of the pieces of information that she accidentally vectored from the source of the crop circles was actually talking about this, the fact that some of the circles are not meant for people, they're meant for the Earth. And in one occasion, I actually asked her about this, and she said, yeah, I mean, the Earth has to evolve as well as an organism. I mean, it's we have been living in geologically very quiet times when you look at the you know, the history of calamities, and you know, we're obviously way overdue for a nice little shift. But at the same time, I think the source of the circles recognizes that we're trying to make an evolutionary shift within ourselves. But you know, we're starting up because we're so afraid, and also because the powers that be will not allow us the shift because they're afraid of losing power.
Right.
So I think some of the circles are here to also buy us a bit of time. And there are those designs that have been in which are, you know, very, very sick. You know, right. Not permanently, but it tells me that I'm not supposed to be in there. And those are the circles that are designed straight for the planet. It's buying us a little bit of time to get our act together. How much more time we have, I don't know.
But what do you think? What do you think these crop circles are doing for the magnetic Earth? When you say it's buying us time, is it reprogramming our magnetic source? Is it like putting a computer chip on a print board?
I think it's just delaying the inevitable. I think it's moving magnetic structures of the Earth around just enough so that the Earth, you know, let's say the San Andreas Fault should have basically buckled 20 years ago. Well, by moving the magnetics of the Earth, you ease the temperament of the Earth and also allow things to move elsewhere. You know, and some of these earthquakes and tidal waves we've been getting recently, you know, they are part of the overall structure of what goes on naturally, but at the same time, you can't help but think that something is building up, and it should have happened, but it hasn't, you know. We can all feel this, but we can't prove it for certain.
Right.
But I think that just the shift of the magnetism of the Earth is enough to allow certain pressure points to be alleviated enough to buy us a few more years of time until we say, you know, we need to be better prepared for shifts. We need to be better prepared within our own communities to help each other in case we lose electricity, for example.
Right.
I mean, we keep talking about solar flares. I mean, that's an inevitability that is going to happen.
Yeah.
And even NASA has said that next year we're going to see some very serious stuff coming out of the sun.
Right.
And they've alerted companies to be on the lookout for major power outages because the satellites may be taken out by solar flares, and that means months without your Twitter account.
Yeah.
And that's a huge calamity to a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I'm still learning my Twitter, so but we
I don't even have a cell phone, so.
Yeah. Well, we are up on Twitter just because of the show, but believe me, it's more work than it's worth some days. I got to tell you that for sure. But why do you think England seems to be the epicenter for crop circles? Like, is it because of the stone worship sites, or?
Oh, I think it is. It took us a while to figure this out, until you sort of step back for 1 year and go, well, what's all this about? If someone, let's think of it from their point of view. If you're going to try to communicate with another species, obviously we have so many languages around the world, let's try and take a language or a country where the language is at least spoken by two-thirds of the population of the Earth, and of course that would be English.
Mm-hmm.
So England would make a pretty good choice. I won't count Scotland because you get a Glasgow, you can't understand anybody, and they understand that, and I love them for it.
Yeah.
At the same time, you also have the greatest concentration of sacred sites anywhere in the world. I mean, this is a tiny country, you know, an island only about the size of Japan, and yet their population density is immense. But when you think about it, the crop circles appear in the least populated part of one of the world's most densest populated islands. So this is by design. And they always appear next to ancient sacred sites. No matter where you go, they'll be referencing the local magnetic lines, they'll reference the history of the local sacred space, and so forth.
Right.
But it's not just England. We also get 15% of the world's crop circles concentrated in the North American prairie. And that's where the connection suddenly, the penny dropped in, because we made the geological connection whereby what's so special about southern Britain and the Canadian prairie? Well, the two are chemical twins. You have the world's deepest chalk aquifer in the south of Britain.
Mm-hmm.
You have the world's deepest limestone aquifer in the Canadian prairie. So the two are basically one and the same thing.
Right.
And when we put this together and realized that the water in the crop circles was also being coded by the energy of the crop circles themselves, then we have laboratory tests to prove this. we finally realized that if you follow the homeopathic principle, that means that whatever water on the ground and the surface is being encoded in these two aquifers, that's a lot of water going into the rivers and streams of the world, which means all the oceans are carrying the frequency of the crop circles. So we're all being touched by this. We're drinking this stuff, and it's getting into our systems. And, of course, ultimately, what you're trying to do to get people to move forward in their thinking is to influence their DNA, which, is, of course, is where your thinking all comes from. That's where you get your receptors and your information.
Right.
So when you consider that just not looking at the crop circles is enough, when you're drinking the energy of this stuff, you start asking yourself questions. You know, what am I doing here? What's my relationship to the planet and to people around me? Mm-hmm. And that's where the change is going to happen. And I know it sounds a bit like a very new age woo-woo thing, but that's exactly what we need to do. We need to reconstruct and rethink our perception of what it is that we're doing down here. And that's how the shift of ages is going to happen.
Yeah. I doing the research for tonight's show, I uncovered that archaeologists have begun a major dig to unearth a hidden mystery. It's called the Marden Henge. So
of course, yes.
And apparently this thing is 10.5 hectares, 10 football fields.
Oh, it's huge. My ex-girlfriend lives there, actually. It's quite annoying.
Wow.
and I actually spent quite a considerable time living in Marden Henge. It's a very energetically unstable place in terms of jarring. It's not bad. It's just a very jarring place. It's huge. If they find the stone circle still buried in there, it's going to be a huge find. Good luck to them.
Yeah, really, really. Now, do you think going back a couple of thousand years that Druids, pagans, were more in tune with these what's happening with crop circles? Do you think they were more in tune than we realize?
Oh, totally. In fact, I just finished writing a book on it. I'm still finishing writing this book on it about what we inherited in ancient sacred sites, and the story is astonishing. Yes, they were, and it was all about working with the natural cycles of the earth, natural cycles of the heavens.
Right.
They figured out the machinery of the gods, and also the fact that the temples originally came from a group or groups of created gods who survived the Great Flood, and they set about, and this is all in the Egyptian pyramid texts, they basically set about reestablishing the former world of the gods, and that was creating primordial mounds on very specifically chosen spots of land around the world, which we now know to be magnetically active areas, and that's where they built all their sacred sites. And the purpose was literally to create an energy field where you and your body, which is basically a great big electromagnetic harness, you take yourself into these temples and you have yourself an experience where you are allowed to leave your body. In other words, you temporarily escape the gravitational pull of the earth, and you can go into a dream state. This is what shamans were doing around the world. And the whole purpose of getting out of your body for a few minutes was to go into the spirit world and come back with useful information that allows you to, you know, walk your dream down here while you're in the body, fully awake and aware. Because when you do that, you have complete control of yourself and your surroundings. It's a kind of magic. It's not as if you go around changing water into wine, although I have seen people that can do that.
Yeah. well, at least I was going to say at least one anyway.
Yeah, they got crucified for their troubles, but these people did exactly the same thing. I mean, people like Jesus were, pretty much, they understood the power of nature. They knew how to harness it and also the problems that came with it.
Right.
And they did it just to show us that, the world is an illusion. We, as human beings, are incredibly powerful people if we just set our mind to it and use our energy in the right way. And that's what the temples were built for, to remind you that you are a god. There is no intermediary like a priest or a bishop. Mm-hmm. You are it, and you are part of this great big machinery. And it's this reminder again that the last 4,000 years we've lost that connection. We've given our power away to the few who control the many. And of course, as you look around you today, these systems are being questioned. They are falling apart. We no longer trust big governments. We no longer trust kings and queens. We realize we need to take this power back, and that brings us back to the crop circles again, because considering that they are based on the same principles as ancient sacred sites, and they are influencing systems of energy, then we are beginning to wake up to this notion that we can take this world back, and that's what's going to basically move forward this paradigm.
Right. Yeah, I can see how this this all interlinks with itself, the metaphysical information for the Earth. I think we lost that thousands of years ago.
We also gave it away. I think it's when I was researching the cycle of the ages, I mean, everything had its own particular purpose. So, and I used to be the same way. I used to think that, wow, this is really, really bad that we've lost our contact with this, that, and the other. But sometimes you have to lose what is most dear to you for you to recognize what you're missing. And for us to lose track of a God, and I mean that in a non-denominational capacity, we lose track of ourselves, our relationship to nature. It was all taken away because we wanted it taken away so we could then, you know, be born in these particular challenging times and say, well, wait a minute, this belongs to us. This planet belongs to us. And we are part of the natural everyday world. And unless we engage with it in a very meaningful and respectful way, none of us are going to survive. So now you have this big awareness of life, and I think we're becoming much more attuned with nature. And slowly there's a revitalization in interest in ancient sacred sites, and also not just in religion, because it's religion itself is falling apart, but there's a discovery of faith. People begin to believe more in themselves. And I think that's nothing but positive news on that front.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I tell you what, Freddie, we're going to take a quick minute 40 break here, do a reset. And when we come back, we'll talk about the rejuvenation of the soil and how the cellular level has changed in the crop circles. How's that?
Absolutely.
We'll be right back.
You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Looking to email the show? The Night Zone. One word. TheNightZone@gmail.com.
In this part of Lincolnshire, the skyline is dotted with huge wind turbines. But today, one of them isn't turning. People who live nearby say that it was hit by a UFO.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Veteran researcher and international best-selling author, Freddie Silva, without doubt, Freddie gives the most comprehensive account of the mystery ever published, much of it from personal and hands-on experience. Freddie Silva, Crop Circles, tonight in the Night Zone.
Welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. Your host, Colin Knight, with our special guest, Freddie Silva.
And Freddie, it is an absolute pleasure for you to be here, sir, and the information is just absolutely fantastic. So these crop circles, after they have formed by whatever means other than man, they tend to show the molecular changes, that they have not just been bent over, but there is like a chemical or molecular change.
Yeah, it certainly defeats the hoax angle very, very quickly, even though it's a very expensive way of proving it. I mean, tens of thousands of samples have been sent to a couple of laboratories around the world, one in Michigan, and the soil sample is sent in blind because the person that analyzes them has to basically not know the origin of what he's studying, otherwise it would defeat the impartiality of his results.
Right.
It also means that the skeptics can't accuse the man of actually fudging the figures. And what we found over the years is that the circles that we know have come from, or pretty much know that they've come from genuine circles, they show an alteration of the crystalline structure of the plants. And in different slides that you can obviously film under the microscope, you can put a normal sample of wheat and compare it to one from a man-made crop circle and from a genuine crop circle. And the difference to the crystalline structure is radical. I mean, it's, even my grandmother could actually pick out the two. But incredibly, this reorganization of the crystalline structure does not harm the plants in any way. And that's what amazes me. It tells me that there's a non-destructive form of communication going on with complete cooperation from the material involved. Mm-hmm. And farmers have actually noticed this. Five farmers I spoke to in England actually said that whenever they've had crop circles on their land, and especially if it happens during the early growth phase of the plant, the immature phase of the plant, the plants, if they're left alone and no one goes in and tramples them, they rise back up to the light, as they should, and they start outgrowing the crop in the rest of the field. So there's a certain fertilizing quality to this energy. So these farmers obviously know that the crop circles are good for their land, and there's been a couple that have actually told me that when they've planted the land and they've reseeded it, and the next year's crop comes up, and something very miraculous happens in the middle of the field. Where the original crop circle was, the new seeds, which are now being influenced by the energy field of that area, which I should point out lasts for at least 5 years after the crop circle appeared, this residual energy influences the growth structure of the new seed, and the new seeds start outgrowing the rest of the field in a shape opposite to what the crop circle used to be. So where there were flattened areas, now these areas are actually raised as if they are embossed on the land. So it's quite magical and very non-destructive.
And so the image that is created by the crop circle, even though it outgrows in that design.
If you actually pull some seeds out of the ground, and you can do it, anybody can do this at home if they want. Right. This is a test. There'll be a test on this. You can actually go and pick up, let's say wheat. Take some wheat seeds from a normal field. And then go and find yourself a couple of crop circles. If you're not really familiar with the phenomenon, you can very quickly tell what's real from fake, because the man-made ones, if you lift up a crop, you'll find construction lines underneath, and that's how you quickly know. So you pull those seeds out, put them to one side, and then you go and find yourself a real crop circle, and you take the three types of seeds home, and you bury them and side by side under the same conditions, and watch them grow. And in 3 weeks, what you'll find is that the seeds that came from a normal plant are about 2 inches high, and the seeds that came from a man-made crop circle up 2 inches high. But the ones that came from a crop circle are about 4 inches high. Hmm. It's quite magical.
And this is, you think this is an influence of magnetic fields, or there's more to it than that?
It's partly to do with magnetism, and it's to a high degree it's more to do with sound, which is one of the theories that I finally figured out is predominantly how the crop circles are made. We've recorded these very high-pitched noises coming out of the circles and never quite understood why. And when I was checking back with some of the original channeled material, they kept talking about sound, and I couldn't understand how sound could do this to plants. So I naturally got a lovely book called The Secret Life of Plants, which is almost obvious when you think about it. And there were these wonderful experiments that were done back in India in the 1920s using precisely this medium. And what they found in India was that when you look at sound and its different components, there's an audible component, and there's an ultrasonic component, and an infrasonic component. So when I began to look at how sound behaves above and below the human hearing range, I found some very interesting things. But above, excuse me, there's a...
I hear that.
The CIA coming to get me.
There you go. There you go.
It's a thing with Maine. You have to work with your windows open.
Yeah,
no air conditioning up here.
True.
When you work with ultrasound, it starts to work in very mysterious ways. One, it can influence states of consciousness. And people talk about experiencing altered states of consciousness in crop circles, just like they do in sacred sites, which have been proved to emit ultrasound, and there's a connection, there's an ultrasonic component. Now, two, ultrasound can be aimed like a very fine laser beam to alter the structure of, and program the structure of elements, organic elements, to a very fine degree of control. And when you look at the design of the crop circles, you can see it's almost like this little pen has actually moved different plants to one side and left the other ones alone nearby. So this is a very fine degree of control. Mm-hmm. But it's on the infrasonic side where the fun really begins, because if you look at infrasound and you look at how infrasound behaves with, say, 5 atmospheres of pressure, Now, when you send that a slow wave of sound through a tube filled with water, such as a plant stem, water is boiled in one fraction of a second using infrasound. And we've noticed in the genuine circles that the plants have been charred on the outside, and the nodes of the plant, that is the knuckles of the plant that allows it to bend in wind, they've been stretched beyond normal natural statistical probability, and they're also charred as well. And in the middle of the nodes, you'll find a little hole. And the water inside the plants has been steamed. It's literally been boiled in one fraction of a second because of the pressure wave sound. And Princeton University did this many years ago, by the way. And when that water boils, just like when you make a cup of tea, the water begins to expand. So if the water's inside a filled environment and a closed environment, like a plant stem, it will look for the softest part of the tissue, and that is the node of the plant. Mm-hmm. And what it does is that superheated water creates a hole in the plant from the inside, and the water escapes as steam. And again, five farmers have noticed first thing in the morning when they come and look at their fields and they find a new crop circle on their land with usually a black helicopter from military just above it taking photographs. They'll talk about steam coming out of the crop circle, and that's what nailed the entire thing for me. We finally could explain the whole thing just using sound, exactly as the channel has said.
Well, we have been testing sound now for a good 50 years, trying to understand how we can use it as a weapon. They now have a couple of sound machines on the battlefield that they're testing it with some great results, apparently, but who knows what it's doing to us molecularly.
Exactly, but the other side of the coin is that it can also be used for healing, and ultrasound with the correct frequency, of course, is now used to judge the sex of an unborn child,
right.
And we can also use it to mend bone fractures, and here's the important thing about crop circles and also sacred sites. Both have a very long history of healing as well as altered states of consciousness, and one of my colleagues has at least 800 cases of people being healed spontaneously in crop circles, and they didn't even go there for that reason. A lot of them were actually skeptics. So there is a huge potential of is free medicine with a crop circle. So it brings us back to our original question, why are they being debunked? Well, if you have that kind of ability to heal people, then that stands to in the way of the medical industry that will lose billions if you are to this technology.
Yeah. Physician, heal thyself.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we just forgot.
We've just forgotten how. And like you say, thousands of years ago, they obviously knew a heck of a lot more about about the manipulation of magnetic fields. And that may even claim for the building of the pyramids and the moving of rocks that are way heavier than anything that we can lift today.
Absolutely. It's all about understanding the fact that everything is about vibration. And if you find a resonance of an object, and back in the early days, we were able to actually look at a stone or a plant and listen to it. You could figure it out because language really was something that was just getting in the way. I mean, people used to hear things just like the Aboriginal cultures still hear the song lines. And these song lines are magnetic strips of lines which they can find on the landscape just by hearing them. So when you're that much more attuned with nature, you can hear things and see things that we tend to forget about. In the age of Twitter, we're consumed with other things, so our mind is elsewhere. It's where you put your focus that's important. So, yes, we now have plenty of research to back up the fact that just like in the crop circles, the ancient sacred sites are very magnetically active, and in fact, they behave like induction chambers. The pyramids, the stone circles, they all draw a ground current into their center. And that's where beautiful things start to happen to people.
Right. Now, the recent crop circle we spoke about briefly before the show at Fosbury Hill Fort, you think that one's a fake?
Absolutely. Even from the air, you can see the construction lines. And that's the problem with the hoaxes now getting into groups of up to 14 people. And I have caught them on several occasions in England. These are highly organized groups that basically spend a lot of time together and years perfecting their art. And to them, it is an art. I mean, they are mischievous and they ruin a crop for the farmers. But it's still a kind of an art form, even if it's in an illegal art form. But the problem with trying to get too clever is that you have to create more and more construction lines in which to create these works of art. And that means that they're having to find more remote fields from which to work. They're paying the farmers off, and I know they're being paid off because I've met some with some of them. and when you pay off the farmers, you're immune from prosecution. You can work on the fields without being detected for days in bright daylight, and that's what enables them to do these things. And then they go off to certain websites, and they have one of their friends or their girlfriends call it in as an unusual phenomenon, you know. And then, of course, they watch their stuff in the media, and that's how they get their hire. Mm-hmm. So it's a strange subculture. It's a sort of a strange criminal subculture. But at the same time, there have been hoaxers who have been influenced and affected by the crop circle phenomenon. I mean, there have been times when they've actually been spooked away from fields by these incredibly large, bright objects. We call them orbs. I have seen them photographed myself, and until you come across these things, you will not believe it. I mean, the color is incandescent beyond your wildest dreams.
Right.
And they chase the people out of the fields because they're going to make a crop circle there, because the circle makers want to make a crop circle there, so they don't want their field polluted. And at these times that these people get so spooked, they've come so close in contact with another level of reality, that they are humbled by it, and they've actually become part of the research teams as well, because they want to know also what's really causing the crop circles.
Yeah.
So an incredible turn of events.
There is a video up on YouTube called Oliver's Castle.
Impressive.
And I've watched it probably a dozen times, and it's like, this is just too surreal.
It is too surreal. I've got if we have the whole day, I could give you the entire story. In fact, I put it on my website, the truth behind that. Back in 97, the other acknowledged expert on the subject, Colin Andrews and I, we were doing some experiments in England, and someone was actually shadowing me for a lot of the time. I thought I was getting paranoid or something. But in the end, some guy came up to me and said, that where should he go to film a crop circle forming? And I said, well, that's a bit late in the season. I think you've missed a big one there, but if you want to, you can go here or there.
Right.
And he said, well, where shall I catch you if I catch something on film? And my little sort of detector went up very, very quickly that someone is setting me up here. Mm-hmm. I said, well, if you find something, you can catch me at the local bar, you know, where I should catch my messages. Well, 2 days later, this guy shows up with a video of a crop circle forming, and I have three witnesses. One of them said he's passed away, who looked at this video, and there is no crop circle forming in that video. The original film shows a fully formed crop circle with seven orbs flying around it and then leaving the frame. Because if I had seen Orb's film creating a crop circle, I probably would have stolen the camera from him and claimed it for myself. But seriously, I did immediately call Colin on the phone. I said, listen, you should take a look at this film anyway, and we need to analyze it in case it is a fraud. And if it's real, fantastic. We find a connection between the eyewitnesses and the crop circle. But there's no crop circle being formed. So this guy makes himself unavailable for a whole week, during which time he has time to go back to the video facility that he worked in Bristol, England, and he was caught. I mean, he was actually prosecuted by police for initiating a fraud. And he had doctored the video enough to make a crop circle actually appear on film, because I went to the actual site, because you've got to look at the stuff on the ground. You've got to go to the first level of evidence.
Right.
And my colleagues and I looked at this and said, this is one of the worst crop circles we've seen close up. I mean, it really was horrible.
Yeah.
But the irony is that that's precisely how a lot of eyewitnesses say happens just prior to a crop circle. This strange, brightly colored, beach ball-sized orbs floating around at high speed, and the crop circle appears. So, as it turns out, one of the guys that did it, they were going to do it as an end piece for a video as a simulation as to how the crop circles appeared. They just got too greedy.
Yeah.
So there's a truth behind it.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing, is because for every truth, there's probably half a dozen fakes out there. And it's the same with psychic mediums. When I talk to David Baker, who I believe is definitely plugged into something, then you have those that just think that they're mediums or that they have the ability, and it really
your homework.
It really muddies the water and makes it difficult for those that have a genuine abilities and that have some genuine information. It makes it very difficult for them to bring it out for other people to see.
And the friend of mine has a very good way of explaining it. He says it's just humans being And he's right. I mean, whenever you have something miraculous happening, I mean, you could go back to the times of Jesus and look at the guy and say, well, this guy was basically a Buddhist. He was a revolutionary, and he was showing us how to manipulate matter. I mean, walking in water, turning water into wine. These are very old druidical processes, which he went off to England and learned. And there's even a place there called the Jesus Well that dates back 2000 BC, so we know he was there. And he was just showing us how it's all done. But, you know, after he dies, you know, his close followers disseminate his teachings. And then after they die, it becomes a circus. And everybody jumps on the bandwagon. And then the Romans invent the Catholic Church. And then the whole thing breaks apart.
Right.
And now it bears no resemblance. I mean, if Jesus was alive today and he had a lawyer, he'd sue the Catholic Church. I mean, for bending his original teachings.
Well, I think he would sue every Western world church there is, because you
and
know,
the same with Muhammad as well. I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure he's throwing his hair out saying, "I didn't invent terrorists. This is ridiculous."
Yeah, exactly.
Like thy neighbor. So,
Religion has definitely muddied the waters as to what really happened 2,000 years ago. Who really was Jesus Christ? I don't think we have the definitive true story. And as you know, Freddie, when you tell a story in 10 years' time, if you continue telling the story, the embellishment by the time 10 years has gone by is incredible.
Well,
and
it's like sending a message across Ireland, you know.
Yeah.
By the time you get to the other side, it bears no resemblance.
Exactly.
It's almost like a joke,
which
is why I always tell people. I mean, I even get people from colleges asking me about information on cross circles, and they're going to reference my website. And I say, well, don't do that, because you don't know who I am. I could be a complete imposter.
Yeah.
You know, you go read the book, look at the information, look at the acknowledgments, and then do your own homework and make your own opinion, because you don't know who I am. I could be anybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
Speaking
of books, The Sacred Space and Healing Power of Resonance, I think, is one of the best books you ever put together.
Oh, it's that's actually the presentation. The book is Secrets in the Fields.
Yeah,
the
Secrets in the
Fields.
Yeah, exactly. It's
really confusing after a while.
It is brilliant. And believe me, I'm people are sick of hearing it from me this last week, because I've looked at the DVD, Orb, Crop Circles, and Sacred Spaces. I've done the Invisible Temple. I mean, it has been crazy around here, just because I like to get my head around where you're coming from, Freddie, and you know, like we said earlier, that there are people and there are people, and you obviously have tapped into something is there. You are seeing it, and I think you're bringing it through in the books.
It's I mean, I wasn't even looking to write a book. I mean, I just went over to England for many years out of curiosity. I mean, I've been drawing pyramids since I was three. And it just got me. I knew exactly what it was, but I didn't know how to explain it.
Right.
And I just wanted to be helping other people who were struggling for an answer. And then I've had my own extraordinary experiences. I mean, I had walked through this as an atheist, and I came out believing in God in my own manner. And I had no intention ever of sitting down, writing a book, and giving up my life and struggling for a living.
Yeah.
But the fringe benefits of what I found and the connections that the crop circles have made have opened me up to a huge universe that's allowed me to teach people and also to bring awareness to their lives. And I'd like to think that I've made a positive change to thousands of people around the world. Certainly the book has, you know, been published in four languages now, and it's still going strong. And the debunkers have actually never debunked it, and even better, the skeptics refuse to even mention it, which is always a very good sign.
It means that they can debunk it. That's probably what it means. But so, Secrets of the Field is the latest?
It's the original book on the crop circles. It's just had a new makeover. It's got a new cover.
Okay.
And at some point in the next couple of months, hopefully, if I can just sit down and finish the last few chapters, there'll be a new book called Common Wealth, which is about our inheritance in ancient sacred sites and how they are transfiguring the human soul. And that's also going to open up some very interesting doors. Even as I'm writing it, I'm learning new things.
Yeah, and again, it's a work in progress. So, I mean, of course, it's going to grow exponentially as the more information you become aware of.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's you know, you're only as good as the information that you're surrounded by, and the best thing I've learned is to keep an open mind and keep changing your point of view depending on the new information that comes in. And I think that's where we go wrong in the world, is where we stake a position, because our position is only as good as the amount of information that we are exposed to. And if new information should come out that then transcends your boundary, then you should embrace it and say, okay, well, now I know more, now I can expand my theory. And even right. then, you're only approximating the truth, because in the end, only the originators of any objects would know the exact truth. But it's great fun trying to figure them out.
Well, it's a detective story that is ongoing. There's no doubt about that. So, your upcoming appearances, you're going to be at the Universal Light Expo in October?
Oh, that's always fun. There's always a lot of people down there. I seem to have a bit of a cult following in Ohio. And it's a great place. It's one of the most sacred parts of America, next to New Mexico.
Right.
Thousands of mounds and sacred sites, and lots of very giant people buried there as well, up to 12 feet tall. And that gets me interested.
And that's in Columbus, Ohio, right?
That's right.
Right. And then you've got the Spirit Fair in October, mid-October, in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
You've
been there.
You're a busy man.
It's been a quiet year, actually.
Really?
It's given me the time to sit down and write for a change. Usually I'm on a plane every week, so I guess the universe has a way of bolting me to my chair for a change.
Well, maybe it needs the information in book form.
I hope so.
You know? So people can reach you at theinvisibletemple.com.
Absolutely.
That would be the best website to reach you at?
Yeah, unless you're looking specifically for crop circle stuff, then right. it would be cropcirclesecrets.org.
Okay.
But both sites are actually linked to each other, so you won't leave for months. There's a lot of information there.
Right. Well, Freddie, it's been an absolute pleasure, sir. I really appreciate you taking your time out with us tonight. This has been absolutely wonderful. I hope we can get you back again real soon.
Oh, I'm sure we can.
Great. Fabulous. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
for your
Colin.
Time, sir. Freddie Silver, ladies and gentlemen. I tell you, if you're talking crop circles, there is nobody else. He is the man. And we've taken 2 years trying to get Freddie to the show, and from the information that he's provided tonight, we can see why he is so popular in the crop circle genre. There is so much going on out there that we have a bare basic knowledge of what's happening in this world. And as Freddie said, you have to keep an open mind. You know, it's easy enough to say that two guys, after a drunken chat in a pub in England, decided to make crop circles and fool the world. That's easy to do. You know, Doug Bauer and Dave Chorley in 1978. But there's more to it than that. Freddie has proved there's more to it than that. The magnetic resonance, the changes of the crops, and the cellular level of changes. It's absolutely fascinating. But as all good things have to come to an end, so does the Night Zone tonight. At 60 minutes, I can't believe we've blown through there. Thanks for Freddie Silver for joining us tonight. And we hope that all of you will join us next week when Mr. David Baker will be back taking your calls. As psychic medium, it's going to be a lot of fun. In the meantime, in between time, that's it. That's all. Another edition of The Night Zone. Bye now. Hey, Night Zoners, got a minute? I'm sure we all know someone who is experiencing difficult times during this recession, either with unemployment or financial problems, or in relationships. I have friends like that. I would like to remind you that we are all in this together. So if you have friends experiencing hardships, support them with your advice. If you have acquaintances who are having rough times, nurture them with your friendship. Show them kindness. If you have family members who are having difficulties, show them your love. And if you have people in your life who have almost given up, throw them a lifeline of kindness. Remember the golden rule, but for the grace of God, go I. Blessings upon your household. Until then, next time we meet.
This has been a Night Zone production in association with BlogTalkRadio.com.